This is AMDA On The Go, your gateway to expert discussions, journal article reviews, and innovation in post-acute and long-term care. AMDA On The Go is a presentation of the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Support for this podcast is brought to you by U.S. Post-Acute Care. This podcast is eligible for ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits. Details will be provided at the end of this podcast. And now here's our host for AMDA On The Go, Dr. Wayne Saltzman.
Welcome to AMDA On The Go. This podcast will discuss a newly framed concept around rehabilitation and the United States healthcare system. In the January 31st, 2019 issue of the New England Journal of Medicine, Dr. Lynn Flint and others presented a perspectives piece entitled simply Rehabbed to Death, which presented Miss P, an older adult who became trapped and dies within the turnstile of today's healthcare continuum. The response to Ms. P's demise is familiar and visceral, especially for those of us committed to the care of older adults in the post-acute and long-term care setting. The authors point out the problems, and they are not unfamiliar to any leader or doctor, and especially those leaders within the Society of Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine, namely, the lack of advanced care planning, appropriate financing for functional disability at home, nursing facility and hospice coverage for functional disability at end of life, and the removing of incentives for facilities to hospitalize residents who are on Medicaid. The authors note that admission to a post-acute facility is a pivotal life event. So how can we address this issue? Can we at all? Can our system be remediated to address the needs of Ms. P's yet to come in droves a few years from now? This article made me take a pause. How do we digest the concept of being rehabbed to death? Well, who could better help us continue this discussion than lead author of that piece, Dr. Lynn Flint herself, and we are incredibly fortunate to have Dr. Flint with us now. Dr. Flint is an associate professor in the Division of Geriatrics at the University of California, San Francisco, the program director for the Integrated Geriatrics and Palliative Care Fellowship, and she practices at the San Francisco VA Medical Center, where she provides palliative care consultation in the hospital and primary care in the VA Community Living Center. Dr. Flint, welcome to AMDA On The Go.
Thank you, Wayne, and thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really excited to have this conversation.
Dr. Flint, I typically like to start with somewhat of a historical perspective to set our framework for discussion. Fortunately for us, the February 2020 issue of the Journal of the American Medical Directors Association, JAMDA, can provide some help. In an article entitled 30-Year Trends in Nursing Home Composition and Quality Since the Passage of the Omnibus Reconciliation Act, Fasha and others looked at a number of changes that have occurred since 1987, including decreases in the number of facilities and activity of daily living scores, and increases in facility chains, dementia units, racial and ethnic minority admissions, direct transitions from the hospital to long-term care, behavioral issues, staffing hours, and also increased quality. Of course, no one forecasted the rise of the hospitalist movement and movement away from the one doc shop, the growth of the advanced practitioner workforce, EMRs, and Obamacare. So as you look at the evolving skilled nursing facility landscape over time, can you see the trajectory to getting rehabbed to death? Is there an inflection that led us to this point of a difficult return?
This is a great question and really gave me a lot to ponder over as I was preparing to talk with you today. As you look back over the legislation regarding SNFs, even back before 1987, when we go back even to the 90s, I think a lot of people point to the transition to even in the 80s, the transition to prospective payment for acute care hospitals. And there were a couple of famous articles in JAMA talking about concerns that patients were getting discharged, quote, quicker and sicker. And so I think that is one time point that concerns me, kind of a checkpoint on that trajectory. Although people have tried to look at that to see, did did this really lead to increased SNF usage or sicker people coming to SNFs? And the data is a little bit mixed there and not as dramatic as I think we all kind of feel in the clinical environment. So I think, you know, this is such a complicated and multifactorial issue that I think clinically, like I said, we all have a sense that more and more patients are being rehabbed to death. And first of all, we don't have that documented clearly in the research yet. We haven't really looked at the trajectory of this. People coming from home, going to the hospital, going to nursing home, and then cycling back and forth in that last year or two before death over years. It'd be interesting to see the historical trend. But I think it's complicated. I think it has to do with hospitalists, as you said. It has to do with finance. I also think, and this kind of just came to me as you were talking, I wonder if greater attention to palliative medicine and rising availability of palliative care consultation services in the hospital and kind of in the world has not necessarily contributed directly to this process, but potentially put more attention on the decision-making that happens around this time point. And so that too may contribute to our sense that this is happening more and more.
Wow. You know, as I read your perspectives piece again, and I read it a number of times, and reflect now that it's over a year old, I find myself perseverating around the number of Miss P's for whom I've cared and the exponential number of Miss P's cared for by our colleagues in the trenches. I recall thinking, as I'm reflecting many, many times, you know, this elder at the end of life with no healthcare agent, no documentation of goals of care discussions, a full code, is here to get stronger. So, you know, I ask, you know, what was it for you, you know, your tipping point that led you to write this piece, a piece from the New England Journal, which I have to say, without feeling like I'm embellishing, may become as legendary to geriatrics as James Freeze's Compression of Morbidity special article in 1980. I mean, you are one of a gazillion of us thinking and seeing the exact same things. What moved you to say something?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for that comparison. That's a really nice compliment. And I do hope that the paper has a big impact going forward. I also thank you for the validation of the sort of hypothetical conversation that we pose in our paper around the hospital doctor is thinking this person isn't going to get stronger. The nursing home doctor is thinking this person isn't going to get stronger. And in the end, nobody has anywhere to send the person. So I do think these unspoken conversations are happening in the two silos. The thing that moved me to write this really was my personal clinical experience. And it goes back actually to when I started in practice about 10 years ago. So I did a palliative medicine fellowship. And then when in the process of looking for jobs, ended up actually taking a job in a large urban short stay rehab unit. And so I wasn't doing palliative care at that time. And I also had literally not set foot in a skilled nursing facility in any clinical capacity during my internal medicine training. And I was coming in right off of a palliative medicine fellowship. And I looked around and I said, oh my goodness, they're doing palliative medicine or palliative care here. And so that was very impactful on me. And I was able to kind of just see these people cycling from the other side Obviously, I'd seen it a lot as a resident and as a palliative care fellow, but now to see it from the other side of the story was just really, really mind-blowing and eye-opening. And so when I, after that job, I moved over to the VA, but in the process of getting my job over here, you have to give a job talk. And I gave a job talk called Rehab to Death. And and I described three cases of people in the nursing home that I thought would be just really good teaching cases about how the policies, Medicare policy influences care. And then I got to work and many years, you know, passed by and somebody reminded the group of my talk, Rehab to Death. And I said, oh, if anybody wants to write that up with me, let me know. And that's basically how, from a practical place, how we ended up writing it. But what really moved me was just seeing this phenomenon happen, both it really from three sides, as the inpatient hospital provider, as a resident, as a palliative care fellow, trying to assist in some of these conversations, and then also as a SNF doc myself.
Well, it's been very impactful for a large number of folks.
The success of your practice depends on a support team that knows exactly how to navigate through the many variables and nuances of post-acute medicine. Based on years of practical clinical experience, the team at U.S. Post-Acute Care is dedicated to enabling you to deliver the very best quality of patient care, providing a unique complement of administrative and clinical educational support services. To learn more about what U.S. Post-Acute Care can do for your practice, visit uspostacutecare.com.
We are talking with Dr. Lynn Flint about being rehabbed to death. Dr. Flint, one of the goals of the Society for Post-Acute Long-Term Care Medicine is to provide some actionable solution tomorrow for problem or concern today. Your group's follow-up piece in the November 2019 issue of the Journal of the American Geriatric Society, JAGS, entitled Rehab to Death, Breaking the Cycle, that included renowned geriatrician and New Models leader Joanne Lynn as an additional author, further promotes practice changes. You show a prominent Sankey diagram that represents a dismally palpable depiction of transitions and demise in the last 6 months of life. You call for a name change for post-acute care, a model for serious illness communication, and a comprehensive care plan, policies and provisions for caregiver training and support. Lead us through this discussion under the aegis of health policy and economics. Is it all about how CMS needs to evolve and change, or is there something we, Joe Amdas in the trenches, as I call our colleagues, can start working on tomorrow?
Great question. And that was really important to me, particularly when writing the first paper, the New England Journal paper, was I wanted this to feel like a call to action to people who are taking care of patients every day, both in the hospital and in the nursing home. And so I do think that policy is a huge driver of this and that we're going to be seeing changes in the future, in the near future. I know that already the way that short stay nursing home care is paid for has changed very recently, if I have that right. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how that impacts patients' care. But in terms of being on the front line, I think the biggest thing that I would love to see everybody do is really hone their communication skills to be able to communicate effectively with patients and families around these times of transition. I think the medical establishment has just, we've all gotten so used to saying, great news, you're done with your time in the hospital, you're going to go over to this nursing home and get stronger, and I'm writing up your discharge papers, you have a bed today. And that's on the hospital side. And I think on the nursing home side, people kind of show up over there. They don't even know what hit them. And the receiving physician and providers over at the nursing home, the physician may not even see them on the first day. And I think just sort of, first of all, taking account or keeping in mind that the fact that this was probably a huge transition for this person,
yes.
a pivotal life event, and kind of acknowledging the emotions, which could be many different things that surround that particular transition. And also really seeing the need for a short stay in a rehab setting or for skilled nursing care, that's a signal that the person is seriously ill or has a serious functional decline. And it is definitely time to start or continue conversations about goals of care. Mm. And I think there are really good tools to help this communication. And I think just looking for important tools, learning how to talk about goals of care with patients, breaking bad news, kind of going back to some of the basics, but really formulating this as a breaking bad news situation. Wow, you got a lot weaker in the hospital. We really hope that you're going to be able to get stronger here. And using some of the frameworks that we use in palliative care, framing scenarios, possible future scenarios as best case, worst case, most likely types of scenarios when we're giving patients and families information about what to expect, framing a stay in a skilled nursing facility as a trial of treatment. We hope that this is going to help you get home. And maybe we should take a few minutes to think about what we're going to be looking at if we can't get you back home. And then I think also using that time point where many, many facilities now, probably the majority of facilities in the country, are having patients and families do out-of-hospital life-sustaining treatment orders. And that, of course, is a great opportunity to talk about treatment preferences.
Right. You know, you also talk about the community. And the VA has a very prominent home-based community setup for providing primary care. Is there stuff that we could be thinking about even back at home?
Yes, absolutely. And I was so grateful to Joanne Lynch. She really contributed so much expertise around resources in the community and how, she just has this amazing vision of actually creating whole communities that are organized around supporting older adults, not just from the standpoint of having home-based healthcare services, but also around even physical design, making sure that things, basic necessities like food are available to people, that there's not a 6-month wait list to get Meals on Wheels, a whole host of different interventions that could be put into place in the community to really honor older adults in the community and help them to spend the remainder of their life at home if that's what they want to do.
Yeah, and of course, we would be remiss not to mention, or Mary Tinetti would be very upset with us, so we didn't mention the 4M project. And essentially what you're talking about is the first M, which is what matters to me.
Mm-hmm.
Be having more of those conversations.
And I should say, one of the great things about the New England Journal paper was that we got a lot of feedback from lots of experts. I won't even be able to list them all here, but people, this really, I think, stirred a lot for both frontline providers and also for all these really famous geriatricians who are thinking about this work. And so, we were grateful for all of that input too, because another thing is thinking about hospital at home. Do people need to go to the hospital in the first place? That would avoid some of these problems for people.
And that segues very nicely into my last question. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
As has been customary, Dr. Flint, in the time that we have remaining, I typically like to be somewhat provocative with my guests, but not too much. So speaking of relatively famous geriatricians, Dr. Joseph Auslander's last AMD on the Go podcast was the same week that your perspective piece was released. And he was extremely taken by the piece. And he and healthcare policy leader David Grabowski wrote an editorial to your JAGS piece entitled Rehab to Death Reframed, in which they applauded your article, as we all do, and wanted to broaden the context of your concept. They wrote about the applicability of other types of patients and residents, the apparent disconnect between Medicare and Medicaid, and they called for a wide variety of players, and I'm paraphrasing here, from the trenches all the way to Washington, D.C., to build a system that provides high quality and affordable care for a complex and heterogeneous geriatric population. I think about this and I just wonder, can this really happen? Do we all have the ability to align in this regard? Is the team that can advocate for the geriatric population strong enough to succeed in the effort?
That's a big question. And I think it's true, and I could tell from your sigh, we all feel this tremendous weight because I think we all know that this is happening and we're going to have more people in this situation. And so I would say, even beyond can we do it, we really need to do it. We need to bring together people, professionals, people, families, caregivers, all the people who care about taking care of older adults and all the issues related to that, bring them together and figure this out from a policy and economic standpoint, from an education standpoint, and from a direct clinical standpoint. And that's not just in the nursing homes and in the hospital, but as you said before, it's really in the community, in the outpatient clinics where primary care providers are taking care of patients, in homes, all of that. It's kind of a vague answer, but I think that the bottom line is that we really have to do it or else the system is just going to completely break.
So we will call it a work in progress, as we've called a number of things, and we will follow up with you and figure out where we are soon. We have been privileged to speak with and learn from Dr. Lynn Flint, whose concept, Rehabbed to Death, is, I feel, going to be a big piece in changing our healthcare world. Dr. Flint, thank you so very much for spending your time with AMDA on the Go.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
References for this podcast can be found at paltc.org/podcast. Until next time, I'm Dr. Wayne Saltzman for this innovation podcast that we call AMDA on the Go.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by U.S. Post-Acute Care. If you are a physician and interested in obtaining ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits for certification or recertification, go to our new learning management system at apex.paltc.org. Click on podcast and follow the link to this latest episode. Thank you.